Hey, it's the Nerdlings Podcast. I'm your host, WC Chronicles.
And I'm your junior host, Jersey Mike.
And we have got a treat here. We've made our way all the way from Las Vegas, Nevada to here to Ontario, California. Our guest today is, now you might mistaken his name for the race car driver or maybe the soccer player in Europe. No, it's not him. This gentleman has had a long, wonderful musical career, songwriter, singer. He has a tribute band called Ghost in the Machine. He has another tribute band called the Beat Tunes. He's giving me a thumbs up. He has had a songwriter. He wrote a duet that was done worldwide in Europe for Jermaine Jackson and Pia Zadora, When the Rain Falls Down, if I got that correct.
When the rain begins to fall.
When the rain begins to fall. It's been a long drive. Sorry about that.
Right.
He's the chief songstress, the tunesmith for the Robotech animated franchise. I've been following this gentleman's career since his days as lead singer of Paul Revere and the Raiders. He's worked with the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. The list is endless, and we don't want to go through that too long, so we're going to get started. We have Michael Bradley, the musician, not the soccer player, not the race car driver. Michael, hey.
Hey, how you doing? I appreciate you wanting to do this. Hey, it sounds like there's more music happening.
It sounds like more music, but that's okay. We're going to survive on this.
Yeah, cool. But guess what? The star attraction left the stage. He already left the building like Elvis.
Hey, what can I say? I have no idea what to say. Sweat's rolling off of me. I got stuck on the 210 and walked right out of the car onto the stage. And I just now realized I need to go to the bathroom. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I was going while I was talking.
Well,
hey, I had to use a Gatorade bottle, literally stuck in traffic on the way up here, literally.
My fiance, because we both had to pee.
It's human.
And she asked me, have I ever used a bottle? And I'm going, no, but don't tell me you have. So anyway.
We'll touch a little bit on each part of your career because I know we got a time limit here. Robotech, how did that whole thing get started?
Well, when I left Paul Revere and the Raiders, I was living in Reno, and I moved to L.A. And Steve Whitmack was in L.A., and he's the guy that I wrote. He wrote When the Rain Begins to Fall. I was the guy who wrote it with him because he really had the bulk of the idea of the song. And so it's a long story about that song because I was supposed to sing it, and I didn't want to do it with Pia Zadora because it was Pia Zadora. And anyone who remembers Pia...
Yes. She actually lives in Summerlin in Las Vegas.
And she's married to a cop, isn't she?
I think so, and she has a restaurant that she has her name on.
Oh, well, there you go. She used to be a pretty big star. Bought and paid for it by her husband. But anyway... We did that song. We had the success with that song. We ended up giving it to Pia. Okay, Pia, you record it with, and she got Jermaine Jackson to do it. And from that, we were working with a guy from Columbia Records, or CBS Records, Jim Marino, and we're shopping other songs. And Jim said, hey, my best friend is a music supervisor over at this company called Harmony Gold. They're looking for new songs for this animated show called Robotech. It's already been on one season. They're starting a second season. So he sent us over there, and he hired us, basically. That's it.
And then, from there, how many years did you continue to keep involved with the Robotech franchise?
Well, when I saw it, I wasn't hip to anime, and anime looked kind of cheap to me, and they didn't pay us any money anyway. They paid us like $200 a song, and by the way, I've got some legal problems with the fact that they've released record after record after record after record, and we've got contracts they're supposed to pay us from songs from the show that they put on these albums and CDs now. So, right. Now, actually, I could say a lot. I would like to sue them, but and I'm working on it, but... I was explaining, I didn't think that anybody was watching. I knew it was on every day in KCOP in L.A., every single day, 3 o'clock or 3:30 or something. And I knew it was in a couple hundred markets, I think, around the U.S. But I didn't think anybody watched it. And I didn't put it on my bio. I just didn't have it on my bio. I didn't think it was going to do anything. And 10 years went by, and I get a call from this guy. His name is Tom Bateman. and Tom and Dennis Bateman, these twin brothers. They were in their 30s at the time, I think. As a matter of fact, Tom Bateman was very instrumental in bringing the Los Angeles Rams back to L.A.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's been all over TV being interviewed by local sportscasters, and so congratulations, Tom.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, man.
I didn't know that.
No, he's a superstar now, man. But anyway, he was a fan. He said, would you be interested in coming and speaking at a convention? And I said, a convention for what? And he said, Robotech. And I was like, why? He said, because, well, you have thousands and thousands of fans. And I was like, really? Or I didn't believe him. I said, well, come. And so anyway, I was living in Studio City at the time, and he and his brother, Dennis, came over and talked to me, and they're having a convention in Anaheim and said, would you come down? They tried to get me to sing, and I didn't even remember these songs. So
how much time passed between the writing and then the convention taking place?
10 years.
10 years?
Because it was the 10th anniversary convention. That's why.
Okay.
That's why they were having it, and it was in Anaheim. And so I went down there, and they had, and Steve Whitmack also went down, and Thomas White, the music supervisor, and there were other writers. The main writer, Arlen Ober, and Opio Manucci, who did the score and all this, the old Italian guy, great, great guy. They have since passed away. They were there, and we did a wonderful panel and had all these, I don't want to say kids, because I was in my early 30s, I guess. So they were in their early 20s, I guess, I don't know.
A lot of young nerdlings.
Yes, exactly, and told me how that, oh my God, you know, I watched the show every day and how important it was to them. Growing up, a lot of latchkey kids, you come home, you sit in front of the TV, and Robotech was an ongoing saga. So every day it was like, last time on Robotech, you know, and it was more of a soap opera. People fell in love, they died, they, you know, it was like a battle thing, but yet it was a lot of, there was a lot of music, but also a lot of intrigue and drama.
I'm sorry to cut you off there, but it kind of like a cult following. How does it feel to have like a cult following history you can't get away from with this?
Still.
I love it because it afforded me the chance to perform at a couple other conventions in the U.S., but then I found out about South America. And in 2005, I was invited to come down to Chile. Yeah. I know how to pronounce it now. Some people say Chile in South America. And it was a 17-hour flight, and it was crazy.
You lost your passport, almost.
No, that was just last year.
Well, that was last year, okay.
I'm talking about the first
time. I read that story.
You read that? That was a saga and a half. Yeah, go to my Facebook page and go in the archives. You'll read about that.
That was a good one.
That scared the hell out of me. But so I went down there and did a show there, and people waited in line. The autograph line never stopped. And like, it was weird. I was going, what is this? And people were like, oh, it's Michael Bradley. And, oh, would you sign this? And I'm following me to the, we finished the show. They're following me to the car, to the hotel. Security's pushing them back. Yeah. And it's crazy. But fantastic fans. Anyway, but since, and I had a great time there. Then in 2010, they had the 25th anniversary, and so that time I went down, and I went to Chile, and from Chile I went to Argentina, and from Argentina I went to Paraguay, and it was and all these fans, and the show in Chile that time, the first one was just an acoustic show. This time I had a big band, huge concert at this beautiful theater in downtown Santiago, and so that was a wonderful trip. And then just last year I went back, but I didn't go to Chile. I went to Argentina and Paraguay. Chile couldn't get the organization together enough.
Those videos are all over YouTube.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that. I wish I could get paid for that. Anybody who wants, you can send me a dollar. If everybody sent me a buck, you know, I might have 50 bucks.
Wow, I'll tell you what. You might have some women send you some underwear like they do Wayne Newton, but you're married or getting engaged, so we got to stop that now.
Nah, I got plenty of underwear. I shop for them. That's an interesting thing is that when I did my character, I don't know if you
Lance and Lance Belmont and Yellow Dance.
Yes, Yellow Dancer. Yellow Dancer is a woman. So they didn't tell me when I was recording the songs.
They didn't tell you it was a
And I've talked to many Robotech fans who are adults now, and then they go, you know, when Yellow started singing, and all of a sudden it was just like this. I mean, I am a tenor and I have a high voice, and I would have femmed it up. I was an actor, and, you know, I can do that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't, because then I'd have to sing it like that. But they didn't tell me that Lancer was a cross-dresser. But I think I have the distinction of being the first animated cross-dresser in at least in U.S. television.
That's got to be you gonna put that on your resume?
I don't mind. It's everybody's in on the joke, and it's been a fun experience. But what I was going to say was, and the reason I'm so popular in South America, as opposed to anybody else that was involved in Robotech, is that they dubbed everything into Spanish.
Yeah.
So they hired all new actors, and they did both seasons in Spanish, but they left my songs in with my voice singing in English.
In English. So that's why they know it so well.
Yeah. And they knew the songs, and we did a movie that died here, and apparently it was very successful in South America. So they knew Three Dog Night. We got them to perform one of our songs on the soundtrack album, which we have not been paid for. thank you, Harmony Gold.
We're gonna get a summons jersey, Mike.
I'll tell you what, this poor gentleman over here needs to be more fed. Come on, where are these record contracts and all this residuals and stuff?
Yeah,
I gotta bring up the next cheapskate, and I'm gonna say that because I know a little bit more behind the scenes. Okay. Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Yay.
How did that happen?
Paul Revere, God rest his soul.
He was a beautiful man, and I know. Yeah, go ahead. How did Paul? Go ahead.
I was living in Miami, and was playing in a band with Omar Martinez.
Yeah, Stone Disco.
I was living in Miami and playing with Omar Martinez in a band called Hot Ice. Which you mentioned, and we did a record there.
Stone covers.
Rolling Stones disco style. But we did do it more rock because we had, we used heavy guitars in the whole trip, and we sang it very soulful. And so Omar originally was a drummer for Paul Revere and the Raiders back in the 70s. And he got a call from Revere saying that he wanted to put... Revere had retired, and that's why Omar, he went back to Miami.
He had Louie and the Rockets, or the Paul Revere's Raiders, retired, came back, and then you were there.
Yes, they came back, and then they leased the name or whatever from Revere, so they paid him money to use the name. Then Revere saw how successful it was, and he got the urge to come back, and he played with them for a little bit, and then he was looking around. No offense, but he wanted to get his old band back because they're better musicians. I mean,
yeah,
just technically. And I don't think the band was bad. I never heard. Well, no, I heard some of them because a couple of the guys stayed on when Omar and I came, or Omar came back and he took me with him. So basically, he fired the lead singer. So he needed another lead singer. Omar said, you got to take Michael, even though Omar was a great singer. And also Danny Krause, who was our keyboard player.
Yes.
And so the three of us...
Now, I didn't know Danny Krause was in Hot Ice.
Yes. He was, but he's not credited on the album.
Okay.
Hot Ice was actually like a seven-piece band, horn band. But as far as the album, we were just like a four or five-piece band. Five-piece, I think. So Danny's picture's not on there. And I'm not even sure. You know what? I'm not even sure he played any keys on that. He was in the live version of Hot Ice.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Great keyboard player, great singer. We were good friends for many years.
And then I got to ask for Mark Lindsay, those projects that got sidelined, why and what happened?
Well, I have no idea. The funny thing, we were playing, when I was with the Raiders, we were playing in Disneyland, and Mark came down to see the band. As a matter of fact, I just want to say, I think I'm the only member of Paul Revere and the Raiders that hasn't gone back to see Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Really?
Other than Omar. I think Omar just left the band a couple years ago.
He did, yes.
I don't think that he's gone to see him. But up until then, I was the only guy. And when I quit, Revere tried to tell me, man, you're going to miss it. You're going to come back. I've had so many guys come back, and they're standing there, and you can see that, why did I quit this band?
But you had Robotech waiting in the wings, unknown.
Well, Robotech, and I never would have co-written When the Rain Begins to Fall, which... paid my rent for years, and it's still...
Well, I know the special edition album, the original songs that you did on that, Do You Really Mind, yeah. songs like that, read it in a magazine. Those are just, those are classics that miss the mark. They should be redone or something, you know?
How did you know that? How do you know about that record?
I know about that record. I basically became a fan after you left, and then I started going to see them. And then I saw a little bit of some of the old LPs before pre-eBay, which were known as garage sales,
yeah.
and flea markets in the Northwest. And that's, being a hardcore fan, that's when I got interested in seeing you and then more of your back catalog.
Well, yeah, cool. Because I know that was very, it was a limited edition. It was very limited. I think we only pressed maybe 1,000, something like that. I don't know.
Who inspired you to become a rock legend, superstar, internationally known player of the game?
I would say you, Jersey Mike. I'm getting inspired right now, and that's my goal.
Message in a bottle.
Yes, exactly.
You know what's funny? I thought I actually came to a Sting concert tonight. It's amazing. Your voice was just right there. I was like, is that Sting up there? I was like, wow.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, you know, it's all about tribute bands now. And if you want to make a living, if you're not a star and you want to make a living, especially in L.A., you got to be a tribute band or something. You can't. It's not like back east where you can have a good classic rock band and play parties and play the Elks Club and play, you know, whatever, you know, and you can make a decent living. Out here, you play a club, they're going to pay you like $100 a man.
Yeah.
And that's just about it. So my Beatles tribute band, the B-Tunes, and we don't wear the wigs, even though I could use a wig, but we don't dress up like the Beatles, but we do sound a lot like the Beatles. And we only play the English pubs mainly to get the bigger paying parties or whatever, and a lot of people see us there and hire us for more lucrative things. Anyway,
so what is next? I mean, because I gotta say, back when MySpace was still alive and active, you were probably like one of the best musicians to be in contact with or in touch with your followers, your fans, because you're the only musician I know who utilized the music player and would share rare tracks and rare songs and things you were working on.
Yeah, I had a lot of free time, so I spent it. And MySpace, that's an amazing story. What the hell happened to MySpace?
Yeah.
I mean, it just died overnight. I don't know.
There was a picture of Nicki Minaj on there, and they showed her butt, and she became a star because of MySpace, I heard.
Wow.
How the hell do you know where anything is going to take you?
Well, if I'd known that, I would have shown my butt.
Well, I know we're trying to keep this within time limits. Is there anything you want your friends in Argentina? Because we have a listenership a lot overseas. Only about 65% of our listenership is in the U.S. The rest is Europe, South America. Any messages you want to give to your fans? What's coming next in your next projects?
Well, basically, I've been working with John Wicks. He had a band called The Records. And he's British. He's a couple years older than I am. And they were signed by Virgin Records back in 79. And they had a pretty big hit. I missed the hit. It's called Starry Eyes. And they had a couple other minor hits. And anyway, John saw me with the Beatles band, the B-Tunes, at a British pub in Studio City. And he wanted to know if I wanted to play bass with them. And I said, sure. And I looked him up on the internet. And anyway, if you get a chance, look up John Wicks and The Records. That was his band's name. Fantastic music. And so I really did a lot of homework playing bass, and I always played bass for the first time in the band like 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I was always a guitar player. But so I played bass with him, and we did a couple of shows. The last show we did was a great, great show. We played with Peter Asher, Peter Gordon.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he was the headliner, but you know, we were all in our dressing room together, and also Denny Lane. And Denny Lane was in
Paul McCartney and Wings.
Paul McCartney and Wings. And he was also in the Moody Blues. He did Go Now, Go Now, Go Now. Sorry to sing.
No, I'm sure our fans don't wear mine.
So
I'm inspired now. I'm a real rock legend. This is amazing. Buy his stuff, especially wherever he is. And the When's the World Tour coming?
That's a good question. Although I will say that to the South American fans that I'm in contact even though there's always been like 5 years in between me going back for the 15th anniversary, 20th, 25th, 30th, whatever, I think I'm going back next year. So I'm talking to someone in Argentina. But this is going to be not in Buenos Aires, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous city and great people. By the way, if anybody's listening from South America, I love all of you. You're fantastic. I'm starting to sound like Donald Trump. You're the great, fantastic, the best, the absolute best people. Believe me, I can tell you. This I can tell you. But in Santiago, in Buenos Aires, in Asunción, Paraguay, and but this time it's going to be right north of Chile. I think the city is called Arica. I'm possibly coming back. We're talking about them bringing me back in. But I know some Peruvian fans may come because apparently it's close to Peru. And I don't have a map in front of me. But it's close to Chile. It's close to Peru.
Somewhere down there south.
But it's in Argentina. So check my Facebook and my website, and I'll be making that announcement, hopefully.
MichaelBradleyMusic.com.
Yes, thank you very much. That's MichaelBradleyMusic.com.
Just search you on Facebook, and you'll come up.
Yeah, you should.
I'm just going to ask this question.
One last question.
Is the Peruvian flake as good as they say it is down there?
Well, you know, it's... Hey, I used to date a Peruvian flake. Can you call a girl a flake? That's more of a masculine term, though. No. No. I've never been to Peru, but I'm looking forward to meeting some Peruvian fans because I know there's a lot of them down there. So it's been great, and I'm surprised that you hunting me down.
Well, I've been following your career for this long.
Let's put it where it should be, hunting you down. We came all the way up to Vegas to see you perform. That is like...
Going back to your Lola Falana days.
Yes, exactly. We are traveling loyal fans to you.
He was lead guitarist for Lola, am I correct, Lola Falana back when she was in Vegas?
Yes. My years with Lola, I was with her for 4 years, and I loved every minute of that. That was the best. We were playing... It was so wild because it was Las Vegas, baby. We played, you know, the Riviera, they just tore down. We played the Riv. We played the Dunes, where the Rat Pack, that's where I met Sammy Davis Jr. This was in from 84 to 88. And we played the Sands Hotel. We played all these just fantastic historic sites that are no longer there. And but Lola's gig was great, and we went to Hawaii, and it paid really well. We stayed in the best hotels. They didn't have Trump Tower then.
Yeah,
so we didn't have the Trump thing happening. So couldn't stay there.
You are a really good guest to have on as a podcast. You got a wonderful sense of humor. I mean, this is the first time I met you, and to have you on the podcast. I'm going to have to come back and see you do your Beat Tunes thing, because I would love to hear your Beatles stuff.
You have a good time. Everybody loves that band. We play smaller venues in private parties, but you know, it's normally usually an English pub or something like that, and it's a lot of fun. And
maybe we should just get you your own podcast.
Could do that too.
This is the Shiny Squirrel Podcast Network, so.
I could be the next Mark Maron.
We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Fantastic. This is off.
Okay, well, if we work a TV deal in with it, I'll definitely do it.
Okay, a YouTube deal?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else, Mike?
Just that this gentleman, buy his tickets, buy his concerts, buy his memorabilia, buy their albums, everything.
Wait a second.
Buy the stuff from your website, because you'll autograph it. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Oh, yeah, and since I'm not in good standing with Harmony Gold, not that they don't like me, I don't like them. They have not paid me my money, and I don't want to endorse any product that has HG on it.
Okay, just listen, I'm going to say it the way it is. If you don't buy from the man directly, we're coming looking for you.
All right, yeah.
Artist direct.
And these guys are big, man. I'm really intimidated. I'm sitting right in between them, and there's a Deep Purple tribute band in the background playing.
Smoke on the water.
They're going to hit me in the head with a bottle. It's good. You guys have been great. It's been wonderful to meet you.
Thank you.
I do the fist bump.
This could be the Hillary Clinton flu you're passing around.
Oh, yeah. It could be. You know, it's like a funny thing. Howie Mandel. This B2's place, this place called the Sagebrush, which is actually a big venue out in Calabasas. And Howie Mandel was there the other day. And you know, he doesn't shake hands.
Yeah, just.
So I had I had the honor of fisting Howie Mandel. No,
Phil, you want fisting? You want to rephrase that?
Actually, I don't. I could say I fisted Howie Mandel.
Wow. You got a better sense of humor than most. That's great.
Howie, he didn't seem to mind. I don't know. You know, he had a few drinks, a few margaritas.
Did you have protection?
Yeah. I wore 5 condoms, and they fit like a glove.
This has been awesome having you on our podcast, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate it. And Mike, I appreciate it.
Have a great one, and come see this man directly at his website, and pay him $1 for YouTube.
Hey, that's fine. I'll take that.
So hard to find, but I can lose my mind. But you won't see me. I don't know why you should want to hide. And I can't get through.
Thank you.